everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jerry.
And welcome to episode 161. We're going to try to do these a little more frequently. We'll see. I want to say it's probably looking to be about a monthly thing or so. Schedules, deployments, and all that other good stuff coming up that could interfere with a regular bi-weekly schedule, if you will, bi-monthly. Either way, we got some good stuff to talk about today. Jerry and I both have been playing a good bit of Modern and got some nice cards to talk about from Innistrad Midnight Hunt, as well as Modern Horizons 2. And then later we're going to get into how to give advice to pro players. It's been a hot topic on both Reddit and Twitter recently, and I think it'd be good to talk about just for newer players coming up or players who think they have great things to say about how others are playing, what may be the best way to go about that. But first, as always, Jerry, how have you been? What have you been up to?
I've been fantastic. I am now currently on the sweetest schedule ever. I work 15 days a month, and I have 15 days off a month. It's consistent, so I love it. I also did my Modern top 8 cut after the league standings, finished second place, and got $500 cash.
That's awesome, man. Congrats. What deck were you playing?
It's playing Living End.
Yeah, you have been all about Living End.
It's the best deck in Modern, and I won't even question that. I'll get into that later, though.
Yeah. I was going to say, MTG Goldfish might say otherwise, but we were talking a little bit off air. You think that's underrepresented, and yeah, we'll talk more on that in a bit. But no, that's great, man. As for me, I got a nice 4-1 with Crabvine on a league. The only reason I missed a 5-0, I went up against Amulet Titan, and turns out multiple Amulet of Vigors is just very difficult for my deck to beat. It was a very...
Happens.
Yeah, it was a very quick 0-2 loss, but I was able to close out, though, on a 4-1, got extra play points, all that good stuff, was able to sell some cards for more tickets, and it's a good time. I've also been playing around with, like, traditional mill or burn, just different aggro lists, seeing how the meta is, and I really like where Modern's at, and we're going to be talking about that again later, and what I truly believe is one of the greatest cards to come into Crabvine, Otherworldly Gaze.
Man, you are hyping that card, bro.
As soon as I saw it, I knew it was going to be good, and I can't wait to talk about it when we talk into Modern. But I think first, actually, I really want to get into what we've been seeing here on Twitter and on Reddit. So over the weekend, for those who didn't know, and I forgot to, because again, the terrible publicizing that we have with the Magic Pro League and everything else, Worlds happened. And,
I didn't even know. The hell, guys? Get it together.
Right? It was great. I think it was, the top 20 players or the top 24 got together, and we got to see the best of the best actually play.
Yeah, and, I think it's the Pro League dudes. This is their last time doing this thing.
Yep. And big congrats to, and my apologies for mispronouncing, probably, Yuta Takahashi for winning with Is It Dragons, winning against Temur Treasures.
You were very close. It's Yuta Takahashi.
Ah, so close. So close.
I mean, it's reasonable. You got it.
But yeah, so this is, as far as we know, the last of Worlds, the last of major events like this. And it's kind of sad to see, especially Jerry, when we started playing super competitive Magic together, how great the scenes were. We had 4 invitationals a year, multiple GPs. It was just, it was the competitive player's dream, I would say, at its peak in 2014, 2015. They're able to hone in on some things, make things maybe a little bit more streamlined. You saw Star City Games make the migration from being a nationwide circuit to just a Mississippi and East circuit, Mississippi River, that is. And then things slowly started to die down, and sadly, COVID was a huge crush to the competitive scene. But we've had some interesting things happen with the MPL esports, and now we don't know what the future holds.
Well, at least I can give a precursor based on what other card games are doing.
Yeah.
The Pokemon TCG has reopened up the North America and European tours, and they're doing the full tournament scene for next year, everything they had.
Excellent.
So they got those open, but they didn't open up Asia Pacific or South America yet. So we are yet to see that one. You know, they're 50-50 on it, but they got their 2 largest card markets firing off on all cylinders at the beginning of next year.
Yeah.
So if Nintendo's doing it, I think Wizards of the Coast is going to be like, you know what? Maybe we should do this.
Yeah, and hopefully we can get something like that back too, right, for Magic the Gathering. But as with any major event right now, people are always watching. It's great. Wizards actually allows stream, like parties to happen, if you will, where you're allowed to stream their broadcast. You're able to actually provide your own commentary on different plays and things like that while watching the event with your audience on Twitch, on YouTube Live, or on Facebook Live, wherever you want to do it. With that, though, is going to come some criticism, and that's fine. But then some tweets get made, and instead of, I'd say, kind of politely asking or tactfully asking why people are making certain plays, you have one of the best players in the world being told that their decisions are trash. Sadly, Zan Syed, the captain and founder of Team Lotus Box, found this out the hard way. If I go to Twitter here real quick, I'll be able to pull it up. And he tweets at Andre Strosky, please stop boarding out your burn down the house in the mono green matchup. Gold Span Dragon is trash. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a hot take, right? There's nothing wrong with having a different opinion from a pro player or really any player in Magic, right? But it's all about your delivery and how you go about presenting it. And I think that's the lesson that's being learned this weekend with Zan Syed. Very quickly, you saw some of the most prolific names in Magic, that being like Brad Nelson, Todd Anderson coming in, as well as Cedric Phillips, LSV, and many more. Kind of almost on a very hard attack against Zan Syed. Some equated this to bullying, dogpiling, and all of this against him. And it's interesting because in one aspect, I can absolutely see that, right? You got the inner circle, if you will, of the top players. Now, Zan Syed, he's a good player. 2019 SCG Player of the Year. Multiple top eights, multiple wins on the Star City Circuit. Made it to the Players' Championship. Really good. But we've talked a lot about how the Star City scene is grossly different from the Grand Prix scene or the World scene. I think, Jerry, you put it best. It's almost like comparing the freshman level of play to the pro level of play.
Yeah, it's a bunch of freshmen. It's freshman JV.
Yeah.
That's all it really is. It took all of us almost no effort, more of just showing up to get into a Star City Games Invitational. And I did it 5 times. Like, it was no effort. It's not like a Pro Tour where the only time I did it was back when I was able to play Magic every waking moment.
Yeah.
Back in 2010.
Yeah, It is different, it's more exclusive, and it truly does identify the best of the best. Now, Zan does a really good job on the ladder in Magic Arena, always up there in the top 10 or the number one spot at least once. He does a very good job at being able to identify the best decks and being able to exploit them.
His ability has shown that his word does hold some weight,
yep,
for what it's worth.
But when you're looking at a player that is in the MPL and
a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and a Hall of Famer, and you yourself have been nowhere near those accolades. To say their decision-making is trash, before you hit that enter button, that send, that tweet, whatever it may be, think about your delivery. Think about how people could perceive this. Because it's possible that what you're saying is going to be taken grossly out of context. But yeah, the way you actually present that info or that criticism possibly is really going to come back on you. And I think the response that we saw from the pro community was not so much as a target at Zan. I think had anybody close to even Zan's level of play and skill would have come at Andre like that, we would have seen the exact same response. And I think what this is doing is this is the pros protecting themselves, if you will, from aggressive criticism. Offline, Jerry, we kind of talked a little bit. It's like in boot camp when you screw up. How quickly did you get swarmed by like drill instructors or anybody else just in your face telling you how messed up that was so you never make that same mistake again?
I always remember that time I wiped sweat off my brow in formation.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah. You're supposed to be standing at attention, but you look over to your left to see what's going on. Next thing you know, you got two or three, senior NCOs yelling at you for not standing at attention. It's you learn quick.
Yeah, you learn real quick.
They came very hard and from all corners. But then that was it, though. Like, they're not still going after Zan. There hasn't been anything new. There are any more, like, recent jabs or whatnot. It was just a real quick, hey, knock it off. You know, who are you to talk about this? And then there are some snide comments made, like, isn't this the guy that... Or if you want to find out Zan's opinion, you must subscribe to his Patreon. Like, there's a lot of digs that were made at him by pro players and non-pro players. Yeah, it was
kind of funny. Some of the... It was... You know, by definition, it was dogpiling at a point.
Yeah.
So Wizards of the Coast might actually have a good reason why they don't want these pros representing them. Like, this old guard, like, and the Zan Syed types are not good for their publicity by any stretch.
No.
So there's a reason why Wizards isn't supporting you guys and giving you all these extra, you know, these payments for doing their events, these big contracts. They're done with you guys because y'all a bunch of clowns.
Yeah.
To some degree, you know, like, you know, both groups need to look at themselves in the mirror here and understand that no one's being helpful here. Doesn't matter who started it. Doesn't matter who finished it. Matters that y'all look like real bad right now for the game. This doesn't happen in any other competitive gaming environment. It just doesn't.
Yeah, no, it's very easily. It could have been avoided with the initial tweet of, why are you boarding out, burn down the house? I don't think Goldspan Dragon's that great in this matchup.
Yeah, it would have been better that way. Or, he's wrong, but yeah. It would have been better that way. I mean, there's a reason Andra went 7-0, so...
Yeah, what are you going to do? Day one, they did outstanding. But whenever you have comments like that being made, or you're watching the stream and you're like criticizing them to the point of, do they even know how to play Magic? It's like, obviously they do. They're pros playing at Worlds. Like, it's small things like that that, again, just kind of discredit yourself.
Right, definitely discrediting himself. Here's my thought, though, and we definitely talked about this, you and I, beforehand as well. I want this to be the real thing. However, I'm not deluded, and I know what I'm about to say is probably not happening. But what if Zan's goal is to actually just do hot take after hot take after hot take just to get notoriety? You know the old phrase, any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
I suspect that this is a possibility. Is it? No, I don't think that's the case, but I want it to be.
Yeah.
A man could dream that he's got the 5,000 IQ, big plays happening here.
Right. And again, like, no, we're not here to bash one side or the other. The biggest thing that I want to bring a point to on this is how to go about getting that kind of feedback, because this is a great opportunity to learn. Anytime you get to watch the pros play is a moment to learn, and you can take away their decisions on why they bring cards in or why they don't bring cards in. And if you ask politely, or if, you know, you are more dissecting of their plays and not criticizing as much, if you will, because you can do that. You can dissect their plays and not criticize them on it and actually get good feedback. That's how we learn as players, is trying to figure out, okay, well, why wouldn't he want to play this here? And why would they want to bring this card in over this card? But whenever you come out and just immediately trash talk their decision or make it seem like you're a significantly better player, then obviously why do they owe you an explanation for what they're doing? And I will say too, if you're going to be that bold and brazen, have some data to back up your bold claim. Because, again, you're talking about a Hall of Famer finishing the top four of Worlds. So a top four Worlds player. I would hope that if I were to be bold enough to try to say something against their plays, I would have actual data behind it. Now, that's not saying Zan doesn't play a lot and probably didn't do his own testing, because I'm sure he does. I know he does a lot of streams, multiple hours each day, a significant amount of playing of his own to get where he is on the ladder. But if you don't provide that, it just more so to the point drives that you're being arrogant and it's not worth anybody else's time to give you that reason. And instead, they're just going to come at you.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summation of what's going to happen there.
But I would definitely like to know your thoughts, listeners. How do you think the situation was? If you don't know, the tweets are still up. Zan did not take them down. Read through it. Read through the comments. And you can also look it up, too, on Reddit. And see how the different people responded. And I think as you read through it, if you haven't seen the full story of it, you'll kind of see where Jerry and I are coming from. Yes, it was a very aggressive tweet that could have been probably put a little bit differently.
Real hot take, no doubt.
An aggressive hot take, yeah. But the way that the pro community came to kind of stand up for Andre also.
Well, they all fell in line, came, you know, heel to toe on that one.
Again, may have been done so aggressively to prevent something like this from happening again. Or they could have maybe been a little bit easier about it. Especially, again, to somebody who does have some of the accolades that Zayn does have. Because it's, well, we're not saying he's a bad player. He's a really good player. But he's only proven himself so far on the Star City scene. We have yet to see what he can do on a major pro scene, if you will, that being the GP circuit. Hopefully we get a chance in 2022 to actually see that. We'll see.
Yeah. Press X to doubt. I don't think we are. I think the most professional you're going to see is going to be your Star Cities, your Nerd Rages, and your Channel Fireball if they decide to fire off a tournament series in the West Coast.
I really hope so. I would really like to see Channel Fireball do something out west. I
think the biggest card game tournament next year is going to be Pokemon Worlds in June.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, I might actually do the full conversion on that and just play Modern for the funsies.
There you go. Well, speaking of Modern, Jerry, let's talk about Modern. All right, Modern, I think, is in a fantastic wheelhouse right now. I've done probably 5 or 6 leagues, and I've had more and more fun with each one. Even the ones where I, like, 0-3 drop or, you know, 1-3 drop, whatever it is, like, I still have a blast because of how diverse the meta actually is. And I think we owe this a little bit to Modern Horizons 2 and as well as Midnight Hunt coming out. That is kind of shaking things up.
I have a love-hate relationship with Modern Horizons 2. It has been great that what it's done to the format, and that it's a very diverse meta. Anything is possible. You could quite literally play any archetype you want among the different archetypes, your aggro, your control, your combo, whatever have you, and be successful in Modern. However, no more Modern Horizon sets, please, for like ever. It's just Modern having a rotation. Because every time these sets come in, they completely flip the format on its head. Like, almost every one of these decks we see now in the top 10 decks, none of them were even a thought for the most part.
Yeah, I think we've identified 3. So for those that don't know, the current top 10 on MTG Goldfish is like a blue-white X control, Hammer Time, Burn, Lurish Jund, Is It Tempo, Elementals, Crashing Footfalls, Is It Control, Tron, and Mill.
The only decks from last season on this top 10 list that were players were Burn, Blue-Red Control, and Tron. Blue-Red Control was, and even this Blue-Red Control list that people are playing, the goofy dress-down shenanigans, that's how they're winning. They're using Dress Down with Thing in the Ice to do a wombo combo there, but we were using Through the, like, if people remembered, I was playing Through the Breach Emrakul. Like, that's what we were doing. Yeah. That was the meta. Tron is still Tron. It does its thing. Make 7 mana, play a Karn is still pretty good in most cases. And Burn is still Burn. The newest thing in Burn, if I'm not mistaken, is Sanctifier Envek.
Yes.
Which has, people are questioning whether this should be replacing Core Firewalker or not, because it is true it does have pro black and pro red, so it blocks all the red creatures from opposing burn matches, but it doesn't hate the grave in the way you want it to. Like, Sanctifier Envek does not stop Living End. As a matter of fact, the Living End player, the 8 cards I side out in that matchup are the 4 Street Rates and the 4 Grief, since I don't have enough black cards to support Grief anymore. So the Sanctifier Envek gets even worse post-board. So you think you're boarding that in and you're getting something, and you're really not.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, Burn 75, or 73, I should say, is the exact same it's been for the past. It's the last new thing came along that people started playing.
Yeah, where I really like Core Firewalker over Sanctifier and Vic 2 is, right, it is a bit of a graveyard hate against, you know, your black-red decks. So if you have an issue with that, like your Living End decks, your...
It does not beat Living End. It actually does not beat Living End, because it only answers black and red cards. It doesn't answer blue. It doesn't answer blue cards.
So you're traditional Living End. I'll go with
that's,
that.
And that's not even a deck.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to entertain that. If you're playing that Living End deck, we have a problem.
I will say it was an absolute house against me in Crabvine, just because, well, most of my creatures are black.
An absolute beating to Dredge.
Yep, that's it, Dredge. Core Firewalker, though, when you look at Core Firewalker in the side for Burn, I think this is more where they want to be. Mainly because this is great against most of your red decks. You got persistent life gain, and a lot of those Izzet decks out there don't have a way to deal with it as soon as it resolves. If this card hits the field against almost any red deck, you're at the advantage. You're probably going to win.
The argument I've seen for Sanctifier over Firewalker is that against Izzet tempo, it has a play to where if they have enough red cards in the yard, Murktide Regent misses a turn.
Okay.
So that's fine. And against Jund, you can also make them miss on Tarmogoyf beats.
Yeah.
But then if they get a Saga in the bin, who cares?
Yep.
They got a card type that you're not dealing with a Sanctifier end back. I'm not saying I won't get any in the future, but I'm not a particular fan of it until that card has proven that it can't do anything.
The surprise for me is seeing a control deck take number one.
The thing is, it's not even a control deck in the sense of what we know control as. This is a meta hater deck. This plays some wacky cards you would just never play in blue-white control mainboard. Like, it plays some of the traditional, like four Teferi Time Raveler, that's normal in every blue-white control pile. But it only plays one Cryptic Command. It's playing three copies of Fire Ice, three copies of Chalice of the Void, two copies of Spreading Seas, three copies of Shark Typhoon, four copies of Solitude. Not even Path. It doesn't even play Path to Exile anymore. It plays Solitude over Path to Exile.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It is. It is very unique to see how this control list has shifted.
This deck is built in it. First off, as the Living End player, this matchup sucks. Like, this deck is really good against me, and I can it's clearly built to deal with Cascade decks.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's got Teferi to shut off the ability to Cascade. You can pitch Solitudes in response to Living Ends to get a bunch of creatures off of it. You can play Chalice of the Voids on zero to just stop them playing Magic. Spreading Seas hits Urza Sagas and the two Saga decks in the top 10. So clearly, you can do Fire Ices to tap down their mana to prevent them from playing the on-time Cascade trick. Like, this is a wild deck. This is not traditional blue-white control in any sense. There are even some versions that don't even play the Cryptic Command anymore. They just play one of our Midnight Hunt cards that is making an impact. Memory Deluge.
Yeah, Memory Deluge. And also Consider has been seeing a lot of play, too, in some of these blue decks.
Yep. Everyone knows Consider was like the first card spoiled. One blue mana instant. Look at the top card of your library. You may put it in your graveyard and draw a card.
Yeah, Memory Deluge, though, is an outstanding card.
That is the fixed Dig Through Time that is very playable. So... depending on the way it's worded is, so it's two blue for an instant. Look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the amount of mana you paid to play this spell. You may put two of those cards into your hand, and the others go to the bottom of your library. And it has flashback of 7. So this is a fixed Dig Through Time, but a better Factor Fiction.
Yeah.
Like, if you had any thoughts of playing Factor Fiction, don't. Just play this. Factor Fiction was good 12 to 15 years ago when the Magic IQ was garbage. Like, now we're better at the game than ever because of all the data. So, let's not give opponents options. Let's choose them ourselves. And the way it's worded, because of the amount of mana you spend on it, so if they have a Thalia, Guardian of Thraven, and you pay 5 to play it, you can look at the top 5 cards of your library. Amazing card.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely a really good card. And again, just one of those cards from Midnight Hunt that is there to make a good impact. And I would say, like, recently, you've seen, and kind of like what you said, though, Modern Horizon sets are now turning almost into rotation.
Yeah, it's modern rotation at this point. I definitely think that.
But, like, when you go through some of these deck lists, right, you're looking through the cards, you're, okay, Modern Horizons 2, Modern Horizons 2, Modern Horizon 2, Modern Horizon. Let's keep going.
Like the blue-white control deck, it has 15 cards in its main deck that are Modern Horizons 2.
Yeah.
And it could theoretically, and I think it probably should be, running 19. I think it could fit 4 Urza Sagas in here, just saying.
Yeah, so
I think it's kind of free.
It's a lot, right, that we're seeing. for the impact of Modern. So how in this meta, Jared, how do we win, right? Because we all don't have deep pockets to where we can constantly be updating our decks and dropping 1400 on Crashing Footfalls or 1600 on Jund. What is it that we can do either over time or even in the now to still be able to go to FNM and be competitive?
Do what I do. So the majority of these decks, their costs are really just in their mana bases. With me, I can play any Izzet or Teemer deck in Modern that I want, excluding my foil burn deck. So if I want to play a Teemer deck, I have access to it with my mana base. With the addition of one copy of Blood Crypt, I can play Dredge if I want to in Modern. So once you have the mana base figured out, for the most part, you're not really throwing around too many dollar bills. Obviously, every blue deck is playing Force of Negation. So that's an investment you just have to make. So unless that card gets banned, I don't ever see any deck not playing four of them if you're playing blue. So start with your mana base. That's your good safe spot. And then after that, you could always pick any of the safe archetypes. Like Burn and Tron have always existed in Modern.
Yeah.
So that's a... Burn is also like, not only has it always existed, it's always been good. Even in broken formats, Burn is still a player. Clearly tells you the power of just going Lava Spike, Lightning Bolt, Rift Bolt, Goblin Guide, game over. You know, not in that order, but you get the idea.
Yeah, no, it's always a player. And like, if I wanted to get warmed back up into Modern, I'm going to go to a new store, or I'm going to play online even, and it's been a while since I've played, and I just kind of want to see what's out there, I'll sleeve up Burn. It is a fairly easy deck to get into with. You have your game plan. You want to control your opponent's creatures. It's pretty simple to do. And the thing is, like, whenever you can master Burn, Burn is still, just like Jerry said, an absolute house of a deck. It's always going to be there in the top 16 at least once, I would say.
Yep.
Very rarely do we see a top 16 of a major event or even into top 32.
I was going to say a top 8. Like, it's almost always in a top 8.
Like, it's there or close just because of how good the deck is. One thing you can do too, right, trying to get these expensive cards. Now, thankfully, we've seen, and I kind of say this with a little bit of salt because I am a collector too, with all the reprintings of fetch lands that we've had and with the shock lands too, we've kind of seen a dip in their prices. Whenever Standard's about to hit a rotation, or if you're outplaying FNM and you get some packs or you get some store credit, there's different ways you can handle that to convert that into Modern staples or into your Modern mana base. If you get a high value Standard card, like I have two gold span dragons, I know I'm never going to use. I'm going to sell those off and I'm going to turn those into Modern cards that I know I need.
Get rid of them.
Yeah. And you can do the same thing, right? If you get packs, open the packs, see what you get and see about trading that into more, Modern based cards and slowly trade your way up. Granted, depending on where you go, they know, hey, he's trading Standard for, Modern playables, you may get a little bit less of a deal, if you will, on your cards. So instead of like maybe 40%, you might only get 30%. But that's okay, because in the long run, though, some of those Modern staples could go up in value. It could also go down in value, just like stocks. It's kind of the weirdest way you can look at this. If you do have a bunch of money and you have the option to get like a booster box or booster packs of some older sets, I would say hold off on that. Just buy the single set you need. Booster packs are fun to open, but for the long-term things, like if you're trying to get griefs, yes, it would be nice to be able to open up a grief in a booster pack, but just buy your griefs. A playset right now is $57, and instead of spending the 100 plus for a set booster box or whatever to try to get two, spend the 60 bucks, take the other 40, and get something else that you want.
Get something nice for yourself. There you go.
Exactly. But then when you get your deck, you settle on it, right?
Yeah, you have to settle on it and master it.
Master that deck. And by master that deck, I mean goldfish it, right? Put yourself in different scenarios of what you have on the board, what your draws are, what your outs are. Whenever you're playtesting with your friends, always play until life totals are zero. Never concede too soon. I got to teach this to a real good buddy of mine and now team member, Jeff Sims. It was Elves versus Crabvine. He was on Elves, I was on Crabvine. And he was ready to concede, but he still had the ability to block, stay alive, and still produce big mana, running a collected company deck too, and being able to elf ball off into his win was very much present, quite a few outs still, and I forced him to keep playing it out. And then we played again, and then we played again, and he got to see all these different avenues now. Because if you're too quick to give up, you're not going to see what the possibility of winning is. And that's why you got to play to that zero. Also then, ask your opponent, if it's someone that you don't really know too well, you can even ask them, hey, what could I have done better? Get together with your friends, proxy up decks, all these different things you can do to prepare yourself. The sideboard, it's definitely based more on what's your local meta. What you see on MTG Goldfish, MTG Top 8, Star City Games, wherever you get your deck lists from, may not be pertinent to what your local meta is. Keep that in mind from when you go to your local meta, also to your bigger events. But you can generally pick a deck, do very well with it, and then go out and have a lot of fun with it too. We have a guy that plays Slivers at Comet Kings down here in Virginia Beach. And the 1 week I saw him go, like, I think it was like 1-3 drop. But then the following week, he went 3-2. Every week is different. Your matchups will be different. Your draws will be different. Okay, Slivers can be a very good deck. I mean, if you all believe me, talk to Paul Conlon. The guy seems to somehow top 8 or top 16 with Slivers at least once a year during the Star City scene. It just happens. He's able to take Jund Dragons to a very high finish as well. So it's not so much what are the top 5 decks. Look at like the top 15 decks. Look at the top 20 decks. And you can choose one of those.
For example, a player named Casiso, he is the guy who created the mono red Obosh archetype from last season. He's still playing it to this day. The cards have changed it somewhat, but the shell, the core of the deck and the playstyle remains, and he's still 5-0ing several leagues with it, even though it's not even represented in the top tiers of the meta. It doesn't have to be a top tier deck to win. Does the deck win, and do you know how to play it? Even though my deck that I play, Living End, has fallen off and is no longer a top 10 deck, I say that with air quotes, the deck is still playable in the hands of its masters, like myself. I can definitely throw around some cards in that pile and still be successful. Like, I just won $500 with the deck, so clearly I'm doing something right with it.
Yep, and with this build too, in the past, or since the beginning of October, there have been 3 5-0s reported to MTG Goldfish, and that is just Obosh Mono Red.
Yep.
And you don't even have to run the list that they're on. Like, this list here, the reason it's so expensive is because you have 4 Ragavans. Now, is Ragavan the best one-drop red currently?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you better believe it.
By far.
There's a reason it carries a $340 price tag for a playset. But you don't need it. You could try something else. Right, there's different ways you could go about your list, honing it to your budget, and then as you get your winnings, work your way up to that dream build that you want. Now, Jerry, when you're at an FNM and you win prize support, what do you normally do with it? Like, do you take store credit? Do you take the packs? What do you do? Well, say it's a standard FNM. Standard packs are in the prize pool.
Okay, so when you take the, so it really depends if your store even offers it. Like, sometimes you just take what you can get, but if you have the choice, take the store credit and get your singles. You know, save whatever money you can on big purchases. Like, obviously, if Ragavan is going to be $400 a playset, you're going to want that store credit to at least take some of the brunt of that price. Do you agree with me?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, just checking. You looked at me all confused there. I was like, uh-oh, did I screw
no,
it up?
No, not at all. Yeah, now, some things I've seen done, too, is let's say it's a win-a-box. Instead of taking the store credit on that box, take that box and then flip it. Because
that depends on the box.
Yeah.
That box has got to be a good box to do that.
Well, even your standard boxes, right? So you pay like $10 for a winner box, we'll say. Store credit is going to be, we'll say, 80. But you take that draft booster box, you could probably sell even a draft booster box for about $90, maybe $100. So you can run it that way, or you can just take the store credit, right? Keep free rolling at that local store, build up that credit, and then, like you said, get those big money singles that you might not be able to get otherwise.
Yeah, the store I've been going to, I just free roll the credit. I absolutely love free rolling it. I haven't spent a dollar there in so long now.
Yeah, that's a really good way to do it. And sometimes, like, some of the store owners, and we had one of these at my previous location. You would have a store owner that's not a big fan of that because they're not coming here and spending money. It's like, right, but you're also not losing money at this point either. Like, it, the money you're losing is the money that goes into what would otherwise be paid out. So instead of giving me 4 booster packs, I'm saying, nah, I'd rather take the $10 store credit. Because I think that's around about what we ended up doing was $250 a pack value in store credit-wise. So that keeps those packs on the shelves. Because those packs, then, he's still selling for like $2.99 or $3.49, whatever it may be, making a little bit more money. And my buy-in for FNM the next week is just free.
And game store owners who run stores like that are like treating it like a casino. Like, why are you tracking me like that?
Yeah.
This ain't a casino. Get off your high horse.
Now, I can understand if they don't collect payment and then the person wins and they're like, oh, I want to take it out of my winnings. I can see that in some aspects. That's a little shady, right?
Yeah, that's shady. That's shady hustling on the player's part, of course. You don't let the player play until they pay, however they choose to pay. Some stores won't even let you use your store credit to pay. So that's something you also have to take into account.
Different ways that you can go from being a standard player or a draft player into being a modern player with very minimal investment. Because we do understand modern is a very expensive format to get into. We've talked on this multiple times before. This is why I built up the collection that I have so that at local game stores, depending on where I go, I can offer up decks for rent. And rather than someone paying $1,000 for a modern deck, they pay me $10 and they could use it for the night. We sign an agreement. I hold them liable for any damages that are done to the deck. They steal it. Sweet. I have your name. I have your info. I will put out a report for you to be arrested for, you know, theft.
It's $1,000 theft is pretty great.
Yep. I mean, depending on the deck too, it could be $2,000. So
right.
Yeah, don't be that guy. Don't be that person that steals a deck that someone lets you borrow. But modern though, grand scheme of things, I really enjoy it. It's an absolute blast still. Keep playing on Magic Online. Keep going to your local game stores and playing. Jerry, let's get into our decks now. Sure. So you've been all over Living End.
Yeah.
Okay, what makes Living End so great right now?
So Living End is the combo deck that can actually play Force of Negation to protect itself, as well as Grief. Not many other combo decks have been successful in griefing. I don't even think you play Grief in Crabvine, do you?
Oh, no, because there's no way for me to get Grief back onto the field.
Got it. Okay, so you don't even play Grief just to be like, you know what, Grief you turn one just to protect my Glimpse from counter magic?
Nope.
Okay, see, this deck has the opportunity to protect itself with free cards. Lots of free cards. My favorite free cards in the deck are your Subtleties, your Force of Negations, and your Griefs.
Okay.
The deck has 12 black cards, 12 black cards main board, and that doesn't include if you draw Living End, so that would make it 15. But you know what, if you have a Living End in your hand and you have a Grief, at least you have something to do with it.
Yeah.
It's something that you never really had an opportunity to do before. So ideally you don't want to draw it, but you do have 15 black cards to get a hold of. And then your blue cards for your Force of Negations, you have anywhere in the ballpark from, it's usually about 30 to 34 blue cards in your deck. So you will always have a Force of Negation to pitch. Some of the key cards that you really want into your graveyard are completely dependent on your matchups. Like against a blue-white spot removal deck or the Is It Tempo deck, I would love to see my Striped River Winders in my graveyard because they have Hexproof. If I'm playing against Elementals or E-tron, their tribal decks try to get a lot of creatures out. I want my copies of Waker of Waves. I'm going to make your creatures worse than mine, and they're already worse than mine, so I'm going to make them even worse. Compared to the old Living End list where none of the creatures had effects on them, these creatures do even when they're on the board. Curator of Mysteries, like sometimes you just cast it for 4, but when you cycle a card with it on the battlefield, you can actually look at the top card of your deck and scry it away. So it gives you more outs to get better Living End. Better Living End interaction.
Right.
And also having access to main deck Brazen Borrower. Like, again, this is the adventure mechanic being busted with the Cascade mechanic, is that these cards are more expensive than what we are actually paying for them. 3 mana Brazen Borrower means I can't Cascade into it, but I can Petty Theft away a Chalice of the Void at the end of your turn, and then hold up Violent Outburst or Shardless Agent on my turn to cascade into Living End.
Exactly. And do you think Shardless Agent helped make Living End a little bit better because it gave you another cascade out?
So, yes, it gave you another... The important thing is that it gave you a body more so than the actual cascade out, and it fixed your mana better. Because for a short period of time, people were already hyping up Ardent Plea with the list, and there were a few lists that were pre-Shardless Agent were doing the Ardent Plea, Violent Outburst, the rest of the deck being a bunch of blue cards. Because right. at the time, Grief wasn't a card either. So at least now we're definitely a dedicated teamer deck and not a four-color mishmash pile that has to run City of Brass or some crap like that. And some people still do. I can, you know, in my version right now, I run a single copy of Sunken Ruins just so I can cast my black cards if I have to. And, you know, sometimes you just go end of your turn, Violent Outburst, flip in the Living End, play my Sunken Ruins, cast my Grief, take your Supreme Verdict out of your hand. Good game. Glad we had it. That line has come up quite a few times. Any other questions you got about it, Rob?
No, just like it's a really good deck. It's pretty skill intensive enough. You have to know how to go about playing it. But also what I like about it is against the unsuspecting player, it is a very complex deck to go against. Like it seems pretty straightforward with you cascading into a Living End and whatnot. But if you don't truly understand how Living End works, you're probably not going to do well against it.
Okay, I'll give you a little something here. Here's the best ways to beat me. The best ways to beat me are Blusterstorm, Teferi Time Raveler. I guess Chalice of the Void is fine, but Fairy Macabre is the better card. Like, traditional Grave Hate really doesn't work against me because if I blow up, like, I get to play Foundation Breaker out of my sideboard, which was an Evoke creature from Modern Horizons 2. Costs 4. When it enters the battlefield, destroy target artifact or enchantment. You can also pay 1 and a green to evoke it. It enters the battlefield, destroys the artifact or enchantment, and then sacrifices itself. So you stack the triggers in a way where I destroy your Rest in Peace, then I get to put it in my grave. So not only did I destroy your Rest in Peace, I put another body in my graveyard for free for the 2 mana that I invested into it.
Gotcha.
So traditional Grave Hate just hasn't been very good against it, but you can interact with the Living End on the stack. The best ways I've seen it are the Flusterstorm. A couple people still are trying to play Dovin's Veto. However, if you're trying to play Saga in your blue-white control decks, Veto hasn't been so popular. And Fairy Macabre, because it's the only Grave Hate card that Living End just can't answer. Fairy Macabre is 1 black and a black for a 2-2. It was reprinted last in a Modern Master set, I know that, but it was originally printed in Shadowmoor. And for a while before it was reprinted, it was like a $3 common. But it's a flying 2-2. But it has, you know, that seems pretty bad. But it has an awesome effect where it says, discard Fairy Macabre, exile up to 2 target cards from graveyards. So you discard the Fairy Macabre in response to the Living End, exile their 2 best targets, and now when their Living End resolves, you get the Fairy Macabre as well as they get 2 less targets. And then Flusterstorm's so good because Storm. Right. You know, I can't counter all the copies of Flusterstorm that you have.
Yeah.
Some people think Chalice of the Void is good, and it is a stopgap sometimes. Like if I don't draw into the Brazen Borrower, it can be fast enough to win you the game. But you actually have to win the game too, because I can bounce it. Now a lot of people don't realize the best play to use Chalice of the Voids is get the Chalice out for 0 as fast as you can, and then put out another Chalice on 2. Now this is only for game 1, because if you have a Chalice on 2 and a Chalice on 0, I cannot Petty Theft the Chalice on 0.
Right.
And then that locks me out of the game. However, the other part of the game plan is, okay, so now you've spent all these resources out of your sideboard for hating me out, and your hand is garbage, but now I get to go, okay, tap 4 mana, play Curator of Mysteries. The end of your turn, flash in Brazen Borrower. 7 power, 2 cards, pretty good. Pretty good stuff right there.
Yeah.
So the deck's plan B is even more potent than before, because the evasive creatures are cheap enough in the deck to where casting them is very reasonable. This includes subtlety. This includes endurance. They are all very castable dudes that do things.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, your turn. Tell me about Crabvine.
All right,
what new tech you got?
So Crabvine has been a deck that, for those who are new to listening to us or anything like that, I have to go back a year and a half, or more than a year and a half ago, right? I was actually doing very well with. I finally got my first big day two at a Star City event, and top 32, two or back-to-back events, that being a Classic and an Open, which was big for me at that time, right? The biggest thing, though, that we got out of Innistrad Midnight Hunt is Otherworldly Gaze. I talked about it a lot when we did our set review and the cards that we think were going to make a big impact. And for those that don't know, Otherworldly Gaze is a one blue instant. It says, look at the top three cards of your library. You may put any number of them into your graveyard, put the rest on top of your library in any order. What's outstanding about this is it allows me to keep greedier hands. And what I mean by greedier hands is I can keep a one land hand that has a couple of crabs, or and if it, as long as it has the Otherworldly Gaze. Because what this allows me to do is it sets up my next draws at this point. Before, if I had crab and I had one land, any land I hit after that, I'm now milling myself unknowingly. And I can mill through lands instead of wanting them to stay on top of my library. I can kind of choose what I mill with Otherworldly Gaze. I've also been able to one time do the dream of at the end of my opponent's second main phase, and it's key where you play this. You play it at in the end of their main phase, not at their end step. I was able to Otherworldly Gaze, and I hit the trifecta of a Creeping Chill, a Narc Amoeba, and a Prized Amalgam. And the reason you want to do it at the end of their main phase is because the way Prized Amalgam reads. Narc Amoeba went from the library to the graveyard, so I get to use its ability, put it onto the battlefield. Creeping Chill went from library to graveyard, I get to use its ability, and Lightning Helix my opponent. The Prized Amalgam now sees that Narc Amoeba hit the battlefield from the graveyard. Okay. And at the beginning of the next end step, it will enter the battlefield tapped. If I did this in my opponent's end step, I would not get Prized Amalgam back until my end step. But since I did it during their second main phase, I now get that Prized Amalgam during their end step, and I'm able to attack with it on my next attack phase. It's only happened once, but you get small little hedges like that. If you don't need lands, say you don't have any crabs, and you need a mill card to mill yourself or something like that, or you need a threat, you can mill past your lands then at that point. It allows you to better set up your draws for the deck that we are. I don't know where else this card would possibly have any real benefits in Modern.
I gotcha.
What do you got?
Very recent list. You'll have to find it on the Dredge Facebook page, but somebody 5-0'd three leagues in a row with Dredge. It's the reason they would want to play it is because it's another card that's instant speed that allows them to start dredging.
Okay.
So obviously you never want to get rid of Cathartic Reunion in that pile of cards, but Shriekhorn and Thrilling Discovery are on the table. Shriekhorn is a little slow. It's also sorcery speed, so it can get countered on the spot. And Thrilling Discovery is also sorcery speed, and it's mana intense on red and white, where the deck is already trying to pull 8 to 11 single red mana cards and 5 red-red cards. So pushing red-white alongside blue is not great.
Yeah.
However, you can sequence it to where the otherworldly journey be the first card you play off of Steam Vents, and you're fine. Your mana will be fine for the rest of the game, especially with Life from the Loam doing its thing.
Yep, I found that list, and yeah, they did very, very well with it. They're also running Faithful Mending, too, in this list.
Yeah, that was another one that got me kind of like, I don't know if it's right, but maybe it is. You know, 2 mana to do the thing you want it to do. Sure.
Yep, and again, but at instant speed, too, that's really where we like as graveyard decks to be.
Because we don't want to be getting Force of Negated our enablers.
Yep, because that's now, another big thing.
You'll never get rid of Cathartic Reunion at a... If your deck can play Cathartic Reunion, you're supposed to, because the cost of playing it is discarding the cards. So even if they force it, at least I got 2 cards with Dredge sitting in my bin.
Exactly.
Ready to at least flip 5 cards.
Yep.
So it's funny how Midnight Hunt, its only impact in Modern has been in all the card advantage card selection cards. It's consider Otherworldly Journey and Memory Deluge and Cathartic Pyre are the cards that have been the most impactful out of the set in terms of what it's doing. And they're all cards that just... And Faithful Mending, I guess. You could throw that in there, too. They're 5 cards that all have unique ways of, you know, card advantage.
Yeah. But no, it's been an absolute blast.
Otherworldly gaze. Sorry,
yeah.
Guys.
Yeah, you're good.
Otherworldly journey. I know is a card. Like, yep. I'm not wrong. I'm just
wrong card.
My collection of Magic cards. You know, when you get older, you start thinking things are what they're not.
But no, so yeah, it has been an absolute house. It is a very difficult common to find. I will say that I've dug through a lot of open boxes at local stores. I think I'm only up to three now. So either a lot of people are buying these up, or it is one of those rare commons, if you will, because they do have those, right? There is the absurd amount of commons you get of certain cards in a box, and then there's the ones where you may get one or two in a box.
Right. It's so weird that they do that. I'm like, aren't these supposed to be evenly distributed? And like, ah, we're going to reduce the power of this common and make you have a hard time finding it.
Yeah. And for those who are hunting commons, draft booster packs are the best pack you want to go for, not set booster packs, because there's a chance where your set booster pack may only have a couple, like one or two commons, if any.
Right.
So just keep that in mind, depending on the card you're hunting and if you're buying packs that way. Get draft booster packs over set boosters.
I got one more topic. This will be a quick one.
All right.
Standard. It's playable. We're good. We did it, guys. It's a fair format.
I will hold my breath on that. If I'm going to play Standard, I'm going to play Magic Online. I'm done playing on Arena.
It's at least a fair format. No deck. There's no 60% of the meta covering one deck. Like, we don't have that crap. No 50 or 60%. You know, there's three playable decks in the current Standard format. Is it control, mono green aggro, and mono white aggro are your tier one decks. This is, if you want to try to win an event, these are your best piles. Your key players are Alrun's Epiphany, Essika's Chariot, and a Luminarch Aspirant. Luminarch Aspirant has been kind of on the fringes of playability. It was originally printed in the recent Zendikar set that got released. It's a one and a white for a 1/1. Beginning of combat on your turn, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. It's basically a modified version of Steel Overseer, best way I could put it. Where Steel Overseer required your deck to be very specific, Luminarch Aspirant is splashable. You put it in any deck. It just so happens mono white's the best shell for it at this time.
Yeah.
Mono green aggro. A lot of people don't know like what the hallmark card is. I believe the answer to that is Essika's Chariot. It's the best card. I think that is the best card in the deck. It is the reason Mr. Andre Osefsky was siding out Burn Down the House for Goldspan Dragons, because Burn Down the House does not kill Essika's Chariot. Burning Hands does, and two cats are going to be slower than a Goldspan Dragon and Alrun's Epiphany. So, and then that brings us to the last part here, the Is It Control pile. The hallmark card of the deck is Alrun's Epiphany.
Yeah.
Some people say that it's kind of dirtily, like, they don't like, they feel like that they're losing to infinite turns. Where my thoughts on this are, if you're resolving a 7-mana sorcery, or if you're letting a 7-mana sorcery resolve, you deserve to lose the game. That's just it. In most standards, 7-mana sorceries are, for the most part, unplayable. It just so happens we have one that's very playable right now, because it has the support that it needs to get there. Any thoughts on Standard, Rob?
I sadly don't know enough about Standard. I have been very anti-Standard with the whole Arena thing. Still been super salty about the whole reprint of Scry Temples. I know it's been like forever for it, but still, I wasn't a big fan of it. But like I said, while you were rambling on, if you heard me in the background, probably not going to play Standard unless I'm playing Magic Online. Magic Arena for me has been too much of a money pit. Yeah, it probably has some of the most rewarding tournaments and whatnot out there. But things that I can do on Magic Online with my winnings is actually convert it to cash. So I'd much rather do that than waste my time on Arena. When really anymore, most of the stuff on Arena doesn't mean much now that we don't even have an MPL.
And another very good thing right now is that the mono white book deck that everyone was scared of in the standard 2022 meta, the deck's not even registering on MTG Goldfish. So, okay. Yeah. Like, people just aren't playing it. Because, I mean, the better control deck right now is the one that actually ends the games. So, if for some reason that deck becomes a thing, people will answer in kind. You'll see Field of Ruins and Cleansing Wildfires come to the format and come to the forefront, and that'll be it. The format is, if you play the format for what it is and not play it on Arena, say play it on online or play it in paper, it's enjoyable. There's a lot of cool decks going on around. The lesson, the learn a lesson mechanic from Strixhaven is actually a player. Like, this is a thing you're doing. Mascot Exhibition is seeing a lot of play and a lot of sideboards. The mono green aggro lists, some of them, the best of one versions, they are playing copies of Gnarled Professor to get access to that stuff from the sideboard. And some of the, and even some of the best of three decks are playing them. Because you're a mono green deck, what all are you going to have in your sideboard anyways? You know, like, your best cards in your sideboard are Tangle Trap, Snakeskin Veil, and Toski. I think that's it.
Yeah.
That's basically it. Everything else is kind of like stuff that could have been in your main board if you really wanted it, where it's probably just better served being lessons that you could tutor up with your Gnarled Professors or whatever other green card that you can learn a lesson from.
I am looking forward to it. I wouldn't mind playing more modern. Like, this modern green deck, I'm looking at it right now. It does look like it'd be a lot of fun.
It is. It's super cheap to buy, too, in paper.
Yeah, like, it's $230, and the most expensive part being a Werewolf Pack Leader.
Right. If you really wanted to juice up the price of the deck, though, you get rid of the unnatural growths and turn them into Renin Sevens. Both cards are fine.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Ranger class. Ranger class is $64 for a playset.
Yeah, that card's ridiculous because you just, if you're in, like, it's weird because some people say Ranger class is the hallmark and some people say Essika's Chariot is the hallmark. I currently say Essika's Chariot is because we're make, like, the Werewolf deck, people are making that card fit into the deck over the Arlen, because it provides more advantage than Arlen does in the long run.
Gotcha.
And the Arlen's really good. That's the sad thing about it. It's like, the Wolves deck is like, oh, I guess we'll play some Cats. Those who don't have Renin Sevens yet are still playing, like, they'll play Goldspan Dragons at the top of their curve for their five drops in the Werewolf deck.
Okay.
Because why not? It makes your Toval, it allows you to do the Kessig Wolf run on the back of Tovalar more often for bigger hits.
Nice.
So I'm in love with Standard again. It's a great format. People are complaining about Ulrun's Epiphany right now, and I think people are making, I think, unfair comparisons to Nexus of Fate and Time Warp. So where Nexus of Fate and Time Warp, in their standards respectively,
right,
you were able to go infinite with those. You can't do that with Ulrun's Epiphany.
Gotcha.
But people are also getting got by, like, pay 9 mana, Galvanic Iteration, and then cast Ulrun's Epiphany, make 4 burn tokens, take 2 extra turns. Build your own time stretch, that's your boogeyman right there? That's what should be banned? I don't know. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah, I'm not really buying, like, it too much. It seems like a lot that you really have to put into this. And if the decks are aggressive enough, that, and you're losing, luck was not on your side. That's really it.
If I'm paying 9 mana for 2 cards to do this thing, you definitely deserve to lose.
Yeah.
Like, we're in, you're in the late part of the game. The control deck did its thing, and the control deck does have a fumble rate. You know, that's why mono green and mono white are actually good decks in the format. They can just beat that deck. You know, Burning Hands, they're playing it in the main board to deal with mono green, but if you catch mono white, Burning Hands can be really silly sometimes off the top deck. You'd be like, oh, that Luminarch Aspirant's a 4/4. Crap. I'm dead.
Yeah.
That comes up a lot. I play the Izzet deck. It's fun. I enjoy it. So that's it. That's my little take on Standard. Enjoyable format, whatever platform you play it on, whether it be paper, Arena, or MTGO, or if you proxy up the crap, you know, have fun. It's a good format.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hey, I think that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. Please, as always, be sure to let us know what your thoughts are. If there's a specific topic you want to hear about, hit us up on any of the social media outlets, that being Facebook, Twitter. We are on Instagram, too. And be sure to give the podcast a follow and let your friends know about the podcast if you're looking at getting into Magic. We have a lot of different things out there throughout the many years that we've been doing this, from Quick Shot deck techs. Granted, they are older now. We need to do some newer ones, as well as a wonderful series that we're able to do, So You Want to Play Magic. And I've already recommended it to quite a few different people who are getting into it. And we've received some really good feedback on it. So definitely give that a check. And if there's anything more y'all want to hear about, just let us know. But that's going to do it for us tonight. Y'all have a fantastic evening.
Oh, snap. Yeah.